a lot of times there's these paradigm shifts, and you know, no matter who you are, once, you know, it lands differently.
Welcome back to Grime America Outlawed. This week, we're going to be talking with Chris Milligan. All sorts of great stuff, like CIA drug running and stuff like that. It's another one of my spy novel type shows. I love this shit. It's my favorite type of show is when it's like a thriller.
Oh, yeah. His dad was all over the place for the intelligence agencies.
I love audiobooks, I love the stories, and it's just, yeah. It's when the podcast plays out like a story, when you can just sort of sit back and listen. It's my favorite type of show.
Yeah, well, it's a publisher of Trine Day as well.
That's what it was. Yeah. And this show fits the bill.
Yeah.
Fits the bill. Yeah.
It really brings context to the drug war. It really does. Like, it goes way back farther than I thought. I mean, I knew some of it goes back farther, but to have it so blatant, you know, and yet people just think of it as, oh, you know, the cocaine from Arkansas and from Colombia and all that stuff. Like, no, this has been global for a while. And they've got the infrastructure now to do whatever they want with it, right? It's like, how long has that infrastructure been in place? Running drugs all over the world.
They probably run Pornhub too.
No, that's Canadian, dude.
Is it?
Yeah, Montreal.
We should have him on the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
You have his contact info?
No, I'm not interested.
Come on. How do you know it's hosted in Montreal? That's you've already know way more than I know. Anyway, yeah, it's a great chat with Chris Milligan. Of course, if you want to catch the live streams, we did stream this live on Rockfin.
The first hour,
the free hour. If you want to head over there and check that out, check out the free show. If you want to catch us live, maybe there's a chat feature there, a live chat feature there, so you can maybe get in some questions on the fly.
We can't do it on YouTube, so we had to go there.
Yeah, we went to Rockfin because YouTube kicked us off. Technically, we have one strike left,
but you're blocked right now, anyways, right?
We're on suspension. We're on timeout.
Timed out.
So our account is still active, but we can't post.
2 minutes, go feel shame.
Or go live.
Go feel shame.
No, we just shut the fuck up for a while. You guys just need to shut up. Take a break. Think about what you've said.
Think about what those Canadian doctors
Strike
said.
Three is going to be a doozy.
Those official Canadian doctors said. Oh, my God. I'm going to rant a little bit in this intro about some stuff.
So. I should upload that old Hitler doc on there for Strike 3. The greatest story ever told. Maybe I'll name it something else. Let the algo catch it. Maybe I don't want to. I could get us in trouble. No such thing as bad publicity, right? I mean, the doc's worth watching. You just got to, like, take it with a whole box of salt. Fact checked it every step of the way, but there's some tidbits in there. Yeah. I'm telling you. So we got a little bit of a longer intro this time because we've been saving up some rants.
Yeah, on an app that's a little short, so we'd like to supplement it with part of the reason why we went outlawed, because, you know, we got stuff that we want to talk about too sometimes.
You can start.
I can start? Well, first of all, what's your opinion on the difference between... Let's talk about the vaccines here for a bit.
Oh boy.
What's your opinion on the difference between accepting the risk and just ignoring or pretending there is no risk? Here's what I mean. Do you want me to explain a little bit?
Elaborate.
Right now I feel like in the media, in the propaganda, in the social atmosphere, in the milieu of the vaccines, it's safe and effective. There's an outright lie that it's safe and effective. There's an official reporting system that's talking about all kinds of deaths, all kinds of injuries, and they're trying to say, oh, those aren't linked to the vaccine.
And there's an official court that's paying out.
It's a different court this time.
Yes, but it's this one?
This is a different court.
In this instant.
The Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund is different.
Oh, so are we only talking about the COVID vaccine right now?
Right now, I'm talking about the COVID vaccine. Or this in general. So it's pretty obvious that there's a risk. It's happening all over. And I'll go over some of
the details. Officially in the U.S., it just passed 1,000 people officially killed by the COVID vaccine. It was like 967.
Well, no. They're still not saying it's officially killed. They're just saying that 1,000 people died after the vaccine. They're still not saying it's connected.
Oh.
officially.
That's convenient.
Yeah. They're just going to keep it unconnected. I mean, how fucking hard is it? They're putting billions of dollars into propaganda to clamp down on the anti-vaxxers.
Can you do that if you hit someone with your car? Can you be like...
It's not connected. You're going to die anyway. Yeah, you're going to die. Just a coincidence that you died right after I hit you with the car. Yeah. So, but then there's the people that know there's a risk, but they're taking it for the greater good, which is a completely different conversation. This is like, hey, I know there's a risk, but I'm willing to put myself out there because if everybody got it, the COVID would be gone.
That's like a weird Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. That's a different conversation though.
You're either still stuck in the matrix or you've fallen in love with your oppressors and you're just like, whatever. You can fuck me in the ass if you just let me go to the store for a while.
Yeah.
I just want to go watch a movie. Now I'll come home. Bend over. Whatever you say.
I got some news.
That's my opinion on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. It's crazy.
I feel sorry for those people.
I know.
Because they're either getting fucked or they're stuck in some weird... You should have seen me and Sarah were walking through the mall
today.
Because
that's still based on false information.
Because we had to go look at... at a job site. Anyway. And so this is the one instance that I wear something over my face all the time is when I'm... in my day job setting.
Because you got the clear little mouth shield
I have the clear little spittle catcher that you have. And then Sarah, of course, is our safety. So she's got the full ensemble, the mask, and the glasses.
What?
Oh, yeah. And we're walking through the mall. And this lady's probably like 60-ish, 65-ish. And she's got her Starbucks in her hand, her big like... fucking Starbucks with whipped cream and all that. And we're walking up the thing and this lady like backs up against the wall and is like creeping along it past us. But we were just like, it was like so blatantly apparent that she was petrified of us. She's petrified of other human beings.
I know. This is
you
what
think
I mean.
It was because I was wearing the spittle catcher?
I don't know. Probably.
There's a couple people have come up to me like I wasn't wearing a mask, and then they see the spittle catcher
That's what's awesome about it. That's what's the beauty about it, because you can see a smile. I just keep smiling at everybody through it.
I started the legal man approach now. I use spittle catcher to get through the door, and then on the chin.
Yeah.
And Oh, yeah, sorry. It's great. The things you learn on Grey America Outlaw. Yeah. This is why you hopefully sign up for Plus. You learn more. In the second hour.
Have you been hearing about the halting of the vaccine tech? Which one is it?
I know the one that Trudeau, I'll be honest, I haven't kept up with much. I've been busy. I just finished up the 13th book of the Last Kingdom series.
Nice.
And I went through the last two like fast because it got real good at the end. But I did see, is it the AstraZeneca one that like most of Europe banned and Trudeau's like, nah, that shit's fine.
I know, I'm trying to make sure that that's not false news, you know. I'm trying to, but I've seen enough resources that I trust talk about it, but it's still hard to get to the initial reporting on that. But it seems like it's a whole, like 17 or so now, and the UK and Canada are stuck and they won't do anything about it. So they're saying doctors and scientists write to European Medicines Agency warn of COVID-19 vaccine dangers. The doctor's letter describes serious potential consequences of the vaccine technology, warning of possible autoimmune reactions, blood clotting abnormalities, stroke, and internal bleeding, including the brain, spinal cord, and heart. The authors request evidence that each medical danger outlined was excluded in preclinical animal models with all three vaccines prior to their approval for use in humans by the EMA. They are demanding that the EMA provide them with data showing that critical studies were done and state, should all such evidence not be available, the authors write, we demand that approval for use of the gene-based vaccines be withdrawn until all the above issues have been properly addressed by the exercise of due diligence by the EMA. And then there's a follow-up letter at the Children's Health Defense. The scientists call on European regulators to respond to urgent safety concerns or halt COVID vaccines. There are 7 urgent safety concerns that the group wants the EMA to address. You can also hear Professor Sukarit Bhakdi's video in this article. I'm going to put a link to the show notes. This is from vaccinechoice.com, and that's a little article in the news nuggets. And then this guy, you must have seen the rounds of Dr. Geert Vandenbosch.
Hey, he's on a Rockfin.
Is he?
I posted that on a Rockfin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because someone emailed me and asked me to.
Okay. Expert sounds the alarm about...
I can decide guys over at Big Tree.
Oh, cool. Really?
Jimmy.
Oh, good.
Jimmy,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Shout out to those guys. Expert sounds the alarm about risks of mass vaccination. So this guy
is... Speaking of those guys, Dell's coming on soon.
Okay, great. So Dr. Geert Vandenbosch, DMV PhD, is an independent virologist and vaccine expert, formerly employed at the Vaccine Alliance and Gates Foundation. So that's Gavi, I think. Yes, it is. Like and the Gates Foundation. Ugh. He is an internationally recognized vaccine developer who worked at the head of the vaccine development office at the German Center for Infection Research. In this video, I'll put a link here in the show notes, he warns that humanity is facing a global catastrophe without equal because of the mass administration of what he considers to be the wrong vaccines. In an open letter and other documents published on March 6th, Dr. Bosch sounds the alarm about the risks of mass vaccination for COVID-19 as currently implemented in many countries. And here's a quote. This type of prophylactic vaccines are completely inappropriate and even highly dangerous when used in mass vaccination campaigns during a viral pandemic. Have you heard that? That's what you put on the thing, right? So,
yes.
So what he's going
to
say, here's another quote. Here's another
quote.
Seems
hard to track
down. Yeah,
that.
He's going to be hard to track down. Vaccine deployment in the ongoing mass immunization campaigns are highly likely to further enhance adaptive immune escape, as none of the current vaccines will prevent replication, transmission, or viral variants. The more we use the vaccines for immunizing people in the midst of a pandemic, the more infectious the virus will become, which makes you wonder about the synchronous timing of the vaccine rollout in the UK and the new variants starting, right? Because this thing is mutating.
I could see it.
Ugh.
I had a buddy's dad just die of COVID.
Oh, damn, really?
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine, she got the vaccine and she had shingles. She got shingles 2 weeks after. There's been a few reports of shingles.
Shingles
really,
is a motherfucker,
really,
too.
Really, really bad. So what happened?
I don't know the whole story. I think he was fighting it for a while. He's just, you know, just a bad, bad case. Indian fellow, too.
Wow. Can I ask him questions about it?
I don't know a lot.
Age?
65.
Wow,
70.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. That's, that's scary. Younger than the average. Terrible.
Yeah, younger than the average for sure. Mm.
So they've got in this article, COVID vaccine reactions and deaths, how to report an injury as well. And they talk about the CDC, 1,265 dead, 25,212 injuries following experimental COVID mRNA vaccines. Darren, did he take the jab, do you know, before that?
I don't know.
Yeah. Can you get some more information for us?
I probably can't, no.
No? Okay.
Not that. It'd be weird. For me to reach out.
Okay, yeah.
Be like scumbaggy.
COVID vaccine injury reports grow in number, but the trend remains consistent. Ugh. 12 residents die after first COVID vaccine in Wales Nursing and Dementia Care Center. This nasal swab test causes brain injury leading to surgery in a Texas woman. So then I want to just read to you quickly. I mean, there's some great articles in there that I think we're going to put in as full articles into the, to the podcast, into the subscriber feed, the plus feed.
Into plus.
Yeah. You can easily get there just by hitting the grimericaoutlaw.ca/support, right?
No, go to grimericaoutlaw.ca.
Yeah. You'll figure out how to get there.
There's a big thing there.
Yeah. Click on the plus. So here's a public health official going against the narrative.
Okay.
I posted a link where mask mandates empirically failed to stop cases, along with direct quotes without any edit from WHO, CDC, and Oxford University. That was censored by Twitter, and I stated numerous times that it would be irrational to wear a mask when alone riding a bicycle outside, when driving your own car alone, or when walking in the desert alone, and I stand by those words. Those who charge that it is unethical, even dangerous, to question broad population mask mandates must not realize that several of the world's top infectious disease scientists and major public health organizations explicitly question the efficacy of general population masks. The public needs to know the truth. For instance, Jefferson and Hennigan of University of Oxford Center for Evidence-Based Medicine wrote, "It would appear that despite two decades of pandemic preparedness, there is considerable uncertainty as to the value of wearing masks. Oxford's renowned epidemiologist Sunitra Gupta said there is no need for masks unless one is elderly or high risk. Stanford's Jay Bhattacharya stated mask mandates are not supported by the scientific data. There is no scientific evidence that mask mandates worked to slow the spread of the disease. Throughout this pandemic until December, the WHO's advice on the use of masks in the context of COVID-19 stated, at present, there is no direct evidence from studies on COVID-19 and in healthy people in the community on the effectiveness of universal masking of healthy people in the community to prevent infection with respiratory viruses, including COVID-19. In December, the WHO changed their wording to today's, at present, there is only limited and inconsistent scientific evidence to support the effectiveness of masking of healthy people in the community to prevent infection with respiratory viruses, including SARS-CoV-2. So they changed it. And it still only says limited and inconsistent evidence. The CDC, in a review of influenza's pandemics, did not find evidence that surgical-type face masks are effective in reducing laboratory-confirmed influenza transmission, either when worn by infected persons, source control, or by persons in the general community to reduce their susceptibility. And until the WHO removed it on October 21st, 2020, almost immediately after Twitter censored my tweet, highlighting the WHO quote, the WHO had written, at the present time, the widespread use of masks by healthy people in the community is not yet supported by high quality or direct scientific evidence. There are potential benefits and harms to consider. And you know, you can see this. There's some really good charts out there from the official data that show that there's really no difference, or actually it's worse in places where masks are mandated. So please, people, please start looking at the alternative evidence, despite the billions that the government is now going to spend in propaganda to force us people hesitant on the COVID vaccine into a corner. I've already had some people change their mind. They were pushing back against it. Now they're already succumbing to the pressure.
I don't think you need to succumb yet.
I know, but Darren, I'm saying, like, if you guys are skeptical of this agenda.
It's not approved. I'm telling you.
It's got the emergency authorization. That's approved enough for people. Emergency authorization.
But that's enough to
suck. Doesn't matter if your life insurance won't cover it. It doesn't matter if you can't sue the manufacturer. It doesn't matter if the government has indemnity. It doesn't matter. There's billions and billions of propaganda, and people are.
Oh yeah, but I'm saying for like people like us, I don't think it's going to get to the point.
Oh yeah, it's going to. You don't spend billions of dollars if they're going to leave us out there in the open.
I don't think you can legally.
They're coming after everybody. Listen to the legal matter. I don't think an airline
can legally tell me I can't get on a plane because I haven't taken something that's not officially approved.
That's actually risky.
No, I don't think risky. I mean, because I don't think they give a fuck about risky. But I do think it needs official approval.
But they should, though.
They might say that you have to get a flu shot.
Why should I have to do anything that there's a risk? I'm more worried that
they'll say I need to get a flu shot to get on an airplane. I think that's a more immediate concern than having to get a COVID shot to get on an airplane.
Do you think they're going to switch it down the way to the flu passport instead of the COVID passport?
I think they'll have to.
The vaccine passport?
Put it in the red book. It's funny.
you got a red book right there.
That's, no one here gets out alive. This is a Jim Morrison biography.
Ooh, nice.
I don't think he wrote it, though. Was it really a biography? Oh, no.
So anyways,
I guess it is. It's an autobiography when you write it yourself. Yeah.
Well,
Do you write your own autobiography?
No, they never really just write. They have ghostwriters.
I'll write yours after you die.
They have ghostwriters.
You'll be like, I'll be like 75. You'll pass away and I'll write our story.
Okay. Thanks. Just narrate it. I don't want it written down. Just say it. Say it. So anyways,
I figure you make 85.
I think it's, up to the doctors and the scientists. I mean, it really is. Like, I hate to say that, but.
I mean, I think you should be pooping more than once a week.
This is a common.
I'm going to be honest.
Let's just not go there. But, you know, this is a common thing that's crossing boundaries, right? Medical people are seeing it.
Yes.
Scientists are seeing it. People that normally wouldn't be this skeptical are seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the public's sort of going the other way. They're succumbing to the pressure. So
dude,
it's up to the Canadian doctors that just got censored off your YouTube. Please, people, pass this stuff around. Support your independent media before it's gone. Before it's big pharma and the government take over the narrative completely.
You want to hear the email?
And I'll put show notes. Yeah, let's talk about the email. This is great. Okay. This is fantastic.
Your YouTube violated YouTube's community guidelines and has been removed. Hi, fuck you, YouTube. Check out Rockfin and Odyssey. Our team has reviewed your content and, unfortunately, we think it violates our medical misinformation policy. We're removing the following content from YouTube. Canadian doctors speak out about COVID. We know that this might be disappointing, but it's important to us that YouTube is a safe place for all. If content breaks our rules, we remove it. If you think we've made a mistake, you can appeal it, and we'll take another look. Keep reading for more details.
Where was Whitney Webb's video taken down? Because it was too accurate, but it was going
against. That was Patreon.
Patreon.
Yeah.
Yes. This is how it's getting. Now, they're starting to admit that your information is too correct. And it might scare people into not taking the jab. Well, hello, that's what it's for.
How are you?
You wouldn't want to follow accurate information and not take the jab. I mean, is this the bizarro world we're living in right now?
I should get that email out of there. You should pull that up. Actually, we're not going
to
have time.
It's too late to pull it up now. It's way back there in the thread.
YouTube doesn't allow content that explicitly disputes the efficacy of local health authorities or World Health Organization guidance on social distancing and self-isolation that may lead to people to act against the guidance.
Fauci just said 3 feet and 6 feet might not make that much of a difference out loud in the news.
Well, he didn't mean to say that.
He didn't. Well, come on, people.
Anyway,
how does it work?
That's enough of our nonsense. It's time. Jump into our chat. Wonderful. Chris Milligan.
All right. Tonight we've got Chris Milligan with us, the publisher at Trine Day. It's a great little small publishing house that publishes books that, you know, the corporate press don't want to publish because they're too controversial. And he's got a podcast now where you're talking to some of your authors, which is fantastic. So thanks for joining us, Chris.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show. It's been fantastic. It's a great idea to have some of these awesome authors that you guys publish on to talk about their shit.
Well, Oliver Stone told me, you guys got to do a podcast. Other people have told me that too, but I finally says, well, okay.
Yeah. That's good. No, it's a good way to get the authors out there. Hear the stuff from their mouths. I mean, I've already made a couple notes of some of your guests that we got to talk to on the show. It's great. So, you know, you've got a long story of waking up to the CIA drug war and then starting up this publishing stuff. What do you want to, start with? I mean, I've heard your story on your show, but maybe it's a good place to start with people is how you kind of got told about a lot of this stuff going on in the background and sort of that beginning journey, if you don't mind. I'm sure you've told it like a million times, but
Well,
it's important.
Well, basically, you know, my daddy told me some things I didn't understand. And he was a spook. He got involved with intelligence at the age of, on his 18th birthday, he was on a ship going to China. He was an exchange student to the University of Shanghai, from Linfield College in 1936. And I mean, on his birthday, he left Portland to go to Shanghai. And at that point in time, it was mostly just he was working with the State Department, and they told him, they says, well, you know, just keep your eyes open and keep your ears open. And also, if you can gather material that the Japanese are printing, please gather that. And then he left Shanghai in 1937. He went up to Vladivostok and went across the Trans-Siberian Railway to Vienna, and went up to a place in Switzerland, and then went to Berlin, and then ended up in Oxford at the 1937 World Council of Churches, and the Dulles brothers were there. Uh-huh. And then he went back to school and graduated, and he was set up to take to do a graduate school in Europe in 1939. Well, there was some stuff going on in Europe in 1939, and he got as far as Washington, D.C., and soon he was in the basement of the Library of Congress working under Archibald MacLeish, who was the Librarian of Congress and also a member of Skull and Bones. And then he was in an organization called Coordinator of Information, that's COI. That was Donovan's first organization. And then that changed into OSS. And then he got drafted, and OSS said, fine, you're still going to work for us. We're going to put you into the military. We're going to put you into military intelligence. And we're going to put you on MacArthur's staff because we don't trust MacArthur and his aide Willoughby. And so Dad went off to the Philip. This is World War II. And the guy he was working for was Dr. Hayden. He had been in the Philippines quite a while. At that time, the United States of America owned the Philippines. And he had worked a lot with the journalists there because he'd been part of the government of the Philippines. And so that guy, Dr. Hayden, came back to the United States to have a meeting with Roosevelt. And then he died while he was here. And so then they sent my dad out of theater to the United States to pick up the papers that he had. And after he died, I got to see this his order there. And it was quite interesting because, I mean, the list of papers and books that he, I mean, I tell you, United States government and intelligence, they go into deep dives, okay? And they had quite a bit of information about the Philippines, all, you know, about all the commercial things, all the political things. I mean, it was really extensive. And he went back and he started working a bunch with the guerrillas because this guy had been, Dr. Hayden had been one of the coordinators of the guerrillas. And so my dad started working with the guerrillas, and he went into Manila before the troops, and he went in with the guerrillas, and they proceeded to there was a bunch of collaborators, Filipino collaborators that had collaborated with the Japanese, and they put those guys in jail. And then my dad was helping them set up their government and their diplomatic mission. And a little while later, MacArthur strolled into Manila, and he MacArthur had been raised in the Philippines. And so when he got to Manila, these collaborators were people that he'd grown up with, and they were his friends, and he didn't like that. And he wanted to find out who was responsible. My dad was responsible. And so he said, get rid of Milligan. And so they moved my dad to be head of research and analysis for the invasion of Japan. A little side note, I Can't tell you how many times he told me that we did not have to drop the bomb. We got the same agreement with him that we had with him before the bomb that we got after. And then they had to get somebody to replace my dad, who was both in OSS and in G2, military intelligence, and there was very few of those people, and the person they got was a guy by the name of Ed Lansdale. And my dad had seen some papers where he had been working with him earlier in psychological warfare. And so Lansdale is a very interesting guy. For my money, he was the scriptwriter of the JFK assassination. But so then after VJ Day, victory over Japan, my dad stayed in the military for, I don't know, a month or so, and they had him write a report on the Japanese use of heroin and opium before and during World War II. And he had to go into China and do quite a few interviews for that with the Sung sisters. The Sung sisters are very interesting sisters. They one of them married Chiang Kai-shek, the other one married Sun Yat-sen, and their buddy, their brother, T.J. Sung, was the head of the Bank of China, and all Western aid and all Western money all went through T.J. Sung. And so then, as my dad told me, he says he went back to DC, and he went through a couple of alphas and then was in the CIA at the beginning. And he was branch chief head of all of East Asia analysis office. And you have a station chief in like Saigon, a section chief in Honolulu. And then the branch chief is in DC. Now, how did I learn this? Well, my dad, in the late 60s, I was growing up, and I remember coming home one time, my dad asked me one time, we were watching TV, and he says, "What do you think of the Vietnam War?" And I says, "Well," and you know, I was a teenager, and I'd been raised on John Wayne and World War II, and I gave my dad a flip answer. I says, "Well, you got a sack of hand grenades and you got some rice patties and you go throw the hand grenades to win it for the good guys wearing the white hats." You know, I mean, it's just a flip answer to my dad. And he said we had to have a talk. And then the next thing was I was, after graduation, I started going to school, Portland State. And I came home one day and we were standing out in the driveway, and my dad looks at me, and he asked me about heroin. I said, "Dad, I don't see that stuff. And remember, Dad, the nurse had to chase me around the table to get a shot in me. And so I don't like that stuff. I just smoke some pot." And my dad said, "Well, you're just making money for them." And the way he spat out "them," I knew he didn't like them. But, you know, I mean, I was, teenager and having fun. And so, then about the day before my 20th birthday, I'd gone to visit the folks. I'd moved out. I was living up in Portland. And I figured, it was for cake and ice cream, something like that. And we're there, and my dad looks at me after a while. He says, "Well, it's time to have that talk." I said, "Well, okay." And he took me into what I called my little brother's room, and it was downstairs. There's this professor that was visiting them, Professor D.F. Fleming from Vanderbilt. And because my... we had lived in Nashville for a couple of years. And we went in and sat down, and my dad just, you know, he looks at me and he says, the Vietnam War is about drugs. There's these secret societies behind it. And I'm thinking, okay, dad's talking about the mafia. I mean, it's the only thing I could think. I mean, this is 1969. So I'm thinking, okay. And then he says, and communism's all a sham. These same secret societies are behind it all. It's all a big game. And, you know, I think my dad's nuts. I mean, this doesn't compute. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden this light bulb comes on in my head, and I say, oh, dad is having the drug talk with me, because he hadn't had the other one. I was already married and had a 6-month-old kid. So, you know, I'm talking to my dad. So I'm straightening up and, you know, waiting for my dad to tell me to stop smoking pot, you know, but he doesn't. They start telling me about his intelligence career, which had never been mentioned. I mean, I had known my dad had worked for the CIA, but that was just because of some conversations that my older brother and older sister and I had had. But it was, you know, just never talked about. And
was a professor there for that chat?
Oh yeah, the professor was there. And after they told me about his intelligence career, then they start talking about the Vietnam War, about Vietnam, and they said that, and it's my recollection that it had something to do with when Eisenhower came aboard and they'd done this worldwide assessment report. And in this report, he said that they were playing out one of the lose scenarios in this assessment report, which, again, wasn't computing for me. Because, you know, at this point in time, I was, you know, subject to the draft, and they were trying to, you know, draft all us kids to go over there and kill people. But you had to kill them with rules. There was rules on, you know, I mean, and, you know, when you're trying to kill somebody, you got to, well, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to do it, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that wasn't computing, first off, that they're trying to send us over there to kill these people with rules. But then, you know, my dad and this professor are telling me that they're playing out a lose scenario, which made no sense to me at all.
You know? Lose, not loose.
Yeah, not loose. Lose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know,
okay.
They were playing out a scenario that they knew they weren't going to win the war. They were going to lose the war, and then they, you know, they start getting into propaganda and psychological warfare and sway pieces, and it became pretty apparent that I had no idea of what they were talking about. I mean, it didn't make any sense to me. So, you know, because at that time, I had started a record store. I was putting on rock and roll dances. I was having a good time. So, you know, I said, okay, Dad, and had my cake and ice cream and went on home. And the only thing that I really questioned my dad about, because one of the things he told me, that one of his jobs in the Philippines, one of his main jobs there, besides the other stuff, was to collect everything that was being printed by the Japanese puppet government. And I guess I'd gone and thought about that and said, gee, that seemed like, how do you do that? How do you get a copy of everything that's printed? And he told me, well, says, well, that really wasn't that hard, because at that point in time, to print something, you needed a big machine and a big room with a lot of people and a lot of supplies. And so he would just compromise several people at each place, and he would get his copies. He said the hardest thing for him to get copies of was the mimeograph stuff from the Japanese army and command and whatnot. And so I said, oh, okay, that makes sense. And just went on with my life. And then, oh, I don't know, a couple of years later, I was reading a gallery magazine. And because at that point in time, the girly magazines had all kinds of stories about the JFK assassination, and they were just starting to have articles about CIA drugs. And so I was reading them, and then I was reading this one JFK story, and they started talking about all the different, you know, it was a mob, it was the CIA, it was blah, blah, blah. And then there was a little throwaway line that said, and some people talk about the secret societies. And that brought back the whole conversation that I'd had with my dad. And I'm saying, wow, what was my dad? What was he saying there? What, you know, what was going on? And so I started to research it on my own. I'd already done a couple other independent studies. And so I took on, well, first off, I was talking to somebody, and I told him some of the things my dad said and what my little bit of research that I'd done so far. And they looked at me and said, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. And this was, you know, in the 70s. And I said, well, what's a conspiracy theorist? And so I took that on as an independent discipline to help me study this because, you know, I went into every bookstore I could find and say, okay, show me, take me to a conspiracy section. And they all of them had at least one book, at least had one. And so I start gathering these books, and they're what you would call screeds. So I start gathering these books and reading them. And after a while, I says, now, wait a minute. You know, I've got a book here that blames it all on the Jews. I've got a book here that blames it all on the Mormons. I got a book here that blames it all on the hippies. I got a book here that blames it all on the Masons, you know. And so I started to see these books as like formula books, you know, to get people into little corners, okay, and you don't like me over there and blah, 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 and you know. And it, you know, it just didn't. So, and then, you know, I was, you know, trying to find information about drugs and different things and banking. And the hardest thing for me to find was books about secret societies. Okay. And because that's what my dad, he said secret societies. He didn't name them. He didn't say anything. He just said secret societies.
And at this point, was your father still alive at this point?
Yes, he was. He was still alive. And then I didn't find a book on in 1988, and I believe it was because of the presidential election. I found Anthony Sutton. I came across Anthony Sutton's book, America's Secret Establishment, Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones. And I read that in late 1988, and I said, wow, this is Now I understand what my dad, because through all of this, I just, you know, I couldn't get over that because, I mean, I've been stuffed under the desk because the Ruskies were going to bomb us. It just didn't compute. It didn't make any sense, you know. And my dad had gotten real ill. He'd had Parkinson's disease, and he'd been taking all kinds of medicine for this, which that affected him quite a bit. And so it was hard to talk to him. And then he died in early 1990 from pancreatic cancer. So I never really got to ask him the questions because I didn't understand it. I didn't have any questions because it just, what he had told me before, it didn't make any sense. It just didn't make any sense. So after he died, I got to go through his papers. Ah. And that's where I learned a lot and was able to put together some of the pieces. And amazingly enough, 2 or 3 days after he died, a couple of people showed up on my family house, knocked on the door and asked my mother if they could go through my dad's papers. She let him in, and they did, you know. So, I found some of the most interesting stuff in some of his personal ones that they hadn't gone through. But so the biggest thing I got out of those was, you know, I was going through his papers because at that time I was still, you know, doing a lot of really heavy research on CIA drugs and trying to understand this whole, how this was working. And I was trying to find out a lot of information about the Golden Triangle and Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I'd been found that, I'd been told that Chiang Mai was a small village, you know, and now it's the second largest city in Thailand, and it happened pretty fast. And so I was trying to find out information about, you know, Chiang Mai and whatnot. And I get to my dad's papers and I see this trip in 1956, which we were as kids, we were told that dad was going to write a book on the church in Southeast Asia. And, you know, I was 6 years old or 6, 7 years old. Made sense to me. We went to church every Sunday. So we got dropped off at my grandparents' house out here in Oregon. And the folks went to Southeast Asia. So I'm looking at my dad's papers there, and I see this 56 trip. He'd been in Chiang Mai. And I'm saying, great. I can ask my mom how big Chiang Mai was. She was there in 1956. So the next time I'm at the family house, I say, Mom, how big was Chiang Mai in 1956? And she says, well, it wasn't very big. The biggest thing in town was a church. I've got a picture of it. And she's sitting on the couch and the bookcase is right next to her. And I'm reaching up to get this picture book. And my mom says, and that's when I stopped believing everything that was in the newspapers. And my mother was a very good CIA wife. I would ask her questions and she wouldn't tell me anything. She said, I don't know. So this perked up my ears and I said, Mom, what do you mean? And she says, well, we'd been in this town in Vietnam, Toin in Vietnam, and we'd gone to Bangkok and Chiang Mai, and the big story in the newspapers was about how there'd been a big battle right where we'd been. And she says, dude, there was no battle. We were having a picnic. So I'm looking at my mom's picture book, and there's this picture of my dad and Lansdale talking, because Ed Lansdale was back in Vietnam. And then... you know, I'm turning looking at the page, and there's this beautiful picture of my mother, just vivacious. And I ended up showing it to my siblings later on. It became one of the main pictures at her memorial. And from the side of this picture, it says Eudora, that was her name, Eudora out from Saigon with Colonel Lansdale and North Vietnamese military leaders, you know? And so my dad was absolutely right. Okay, the Vietnam War was about drugs. Okay, because you see, if you look in the historical record, and there's a book that's about the Chinese triads written by I can't think of his name right now, but it tells a story in there about how Lansdale had one of the very few shooting wars between Western intelligence agencies, because in 1954, after Dien Bien Phu, the French left Vietnam, but French intelligence and the Corsican Mafia didn't leave the Golden Triangle. They were still there. And this book talks about how Lansdale asked them to leave, and they said, well, no. And so then he got his own Corsican, and they had a shooting war and got the French intelligence out of there. And we got in there. And basically the Vietnam War was about taking American boys and girls, New Zealand boys and girls, Australian boys and girls, Canadian boys and girls, some Korean and a couple other countries, taking their boys and girls there. And, you know, they were being proffered You know, they would only go for 1 year. I mean, it wasn't like World War II where you signed up for the duration. You know, you knew that you were only going to be there for 1 year. Okay. And then you got to go back home. Right. Well, geez, some of these kids that were there for 1 year got addicted to the heroin that was being proffered to them by anybody who was 12 years and up then. Okay. So, and you know, not all of them stayed
addicted,
heavily addicted, yeah. You know, but a major, some of them did. And, you know, and what does a junkie do? Well, a junkie sells junk. Okay. So, because when you look at this secret societal system, okay. And how they like to control things from out of the shadows. There's a very good book called Generations, A History of America's Future. Okay. And in that book, they show how there's these four generations that go through history that help each other and they move us forward. Okay. And we have a creative, an idealistic, an active, and a reactive, and a civic. A civic. An active or reactive and an idealistic of these cohorts that go forward. Well, this book shows how the people that were teens and preteens in 1860, okay, that cohort group didn't cohere. It didn't come together as a generation, okay? Some of the people joined generation before. Some of them joined the generation after. Some of them just went out in the woods and did weird stuff. Okay. And because that was the civics part of that cohort. And because that, you know, it basically means that our country, United States of America, okay, a republic with democratic institutions, okay, was running on three cylinders. It had a four cycle engine, but it was only running on three cylinders. Okay. So that allows these people from the shadows to affect us more, okay? And so what did they do? Well, they did a false flag, okay? The Spanish-American War, okay? The Spanish-American War was brought to us through yellow journalism and through a false flag. Remember the Maine, okay? There was a big study done by the Navy, and they found out, well, golly gee whiz, yeah, there wasn't a bomb on the outside. It was blown from the inside, okay? So, and a little history lesson here. While that was going on, Teddy Roosevelt was Under Secretary of Navy, okay? And so the Secretary of Navy had the gout, and he had a bad case of it one day, and he went home early. Well, Teddy stepped up to his desk and sent off a bunch of missives. The Secretary of Navy came back and said, "Teddy, what did you do?" And he never left early again. Okay. And basically what Teddy did was he sent the missives out there because when the Spanish-American War was declared, we didn't, it had been all, you know, they'd been yelling about Cuba and there's concentration camps in Cuba and blah, blah, blah. And remember the main Cuba, 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 Cuba. But we didn't go to Cuba right away. But we went to the Philippines just right away. We took the Philippines. Okay. Well, why did we do that? Well, you see, these secret societies started making their money on opium in the 1800s. Okay. And Skull and Bones was started by William Huntington Russell and Alfonso Taft. William Huntington Russell was the scion of the Russell and Company, which was the third largest opium smuggling concern in the world and the largest in America. And so after the Second Opium War, opium became legal. It was in the 1850s. So they lost their cash cow. Okay. And I looked at it in the historical record because at that time, they owned 75% of the emerging steel infrastructure in the Far East, stocking steamship lines and railroads. And you can see where, oh my gosh, they started to to lose their ownership in that, okay, because they lost their cash cow. They lost the smuggling, okay, because what they had done is they had created what's called the opium clipper going up and down the China coast, okay, and they would only deal with one Chinese in each town, okay, and he became their agent. Well, it took a little while for those agents to figure out when, you know, after the second opium war, that, wait a minute, I don't need you smugglers anymore. I just send a wire to India and say, hey, send me a boatload. I'll pay the duties and taxes, you know? And so, like I say, they lost their cash cow. So, foment Spanish-American War. We go out there and, was it Dewey? Okay. And he met the Filipinos on the beach because they were already fighting the Spanish and just kicking the Spanish's behind. And he says, well, my little brown brother, we need to take care of you. And we fought a horrific war there, okay, pillaging, raping, burning whole villages. Mark Twain got himself in a lot of trouble talking about it, okay? And they sent out Arthur MacArthur, okay, as the first military governor. And then they declared the war over before it was over even. And they sent out a civilian governor. And who'd they send out? But William Howard Taft, son of the founder of Skull and Bones, Alfonso Taft. And William Howard Taft was a big guy, okay? You know, and McKinley, who was president, asked him twice to be on the Supreme Court. And Taft had already made it known that that's he wanted to be on the Supreme Court. And matter of fact, he's the only person who was both president of the United States and on the Supreme Court, and not just on the Supreme Court, but chief justice of the Supreme Court. Okay. So he's over in the Philippines, and McKinley asked him twice to be in the Supreme Court. He turns him down. Finally, McKinley's shot, and Roosevelt's president. And the Roosevelts were heavily involved in the drug trade. They were ship captains and owned ships. And then Delano, Warren Delano, Franklin's grandfather, was the chief factor for Russell and Company in Canton for 20 years. And he actually came back to the United States, lost his fortune in a panic, and went back and made another one. Okay? So, and if you look at the historical record, finally, Roosevelt asked William Howard Taft to be Secretary of War. And William Howard Taft said, sure, I'll be Secretary of War. My daddy'd been Secretary of War. So he came back and was Secretary of War and oversaw the building of the Panama Canal. And if you look at the historical record, in between being asked to be on the Supreme Court twice and leaving as Secretary of War, William Howard Taft made opium illegal for the first time in modern Asia in the Philippines.
Wow.
Okay. So what happens when something's illegal? You need smugglers. Yeah, right?
Value goes up.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the price goes up. Yep. 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 So, and then, Taft started the, Shanghai and the Hague conventions. Okay. Which led to the prohibitions that we have today.
Wow.
And those prohibitions have nothing to do with our health, have nothing to do with our children, have nothing to do with our community. They have to do with keeping in place a black market, which allows people then to sell plants for many times more than the price of gold. And if you do this right, you can grow those plants three times a year.
So let's, before we run out of time, I mean, let's, and thanks for staying so long with us, but let's talk about your like Trine Day and the books you're doing. Cause I mean, you guys, you've got some amazing books on there. You're publishing great books. I mean, get a chance to plug that. And if you want, talk about how you did
that. I'm getting tired. You know, people can go to trineday.com. We've got lots of books, lots of different, interesting books. We've got, a very good book. I talking about the metaphysical part of it. We've got one called The History of the Goddess from the Ice Age to the Bible. You know, one thing is going on, this paradigm shift. We are getting away from the patriarchal to more having women being involved in everything, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got a book coming out. One about Diana that goes into quite some interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We've got this book that's going to go into the metaphysical and the about these sacrifices and what it has to do with things and how we can go beyond it.
Blackjack?
No. The Blackjack is a very interesting book, and then there's one that came out past Blackjack called The End.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And I they're basically about, you know, Blackjack is a lot about memes and about, you know, what some people would like to do, but again, I don't know what some people like to do and what really happens. We'll just have to see.
Yeah. So you got more books coming out. You got lots out there. And
what about authors? We have a ton of authors on the show. Are you guys looking for authors? Is there a process for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah. You can give me an email and we can see if we can get a hold of them for you.
Yeah.
You know,
or no, the opposite too.
Some of them don't.
No, like the opposite. If we have no guys that want to get published, we can send them your way. Yeah.
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 Any plans for audiobooks? I know a pretty good narrator.
We do. Yeah, he does audiobooks. If any of your authors want them.
We do some audiobooks, and I'd like to get more. I'm so slammed, it's not funny.
Let us know, because he publishes
them. We publish them. And stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, get a hold of me. Get a hold of me.
Yeah, right on. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for staying up late for us and giving us a fantastic interview. We appreciate it, Chris.
Well, my pleasure, and you know, onwards. It's not easy, but I really think that really good things are happening.
Yeah, that's good.
They really are.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And then also your podcast, just before we go, authors on.
It's called The Journey.
The Journey.
It's called The Journey, because that's what we all have to take here is a bit of a journey from what we were taught to what's real.
Exactly. Awesome. Thanks a lot, buddy. Okay. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye.
Right, see ya. And that was our chat with Chris Milligan. Wow. Getting deep into the global CA drugs, as he calls it, but it's really the global drug trafficking paradigm, I would say, or infrastructure or complex, the global drug trafficking complex. Can we make an acronym out of that?
Can we? Global drug ADTC? ADTC?
Yeah, it doesn't sound good.
Sounds like the ADFF or whatever, the Jew defense people.
So yeah, the second half's pretty good too.
Are they going to come after me?
No, it's okay. Second half's pretty good too, right?
Should be okay.
Get into good part and just Jewish, or
probably maybe the smart part. Am I allowed to say that? No. I thought like the because it specifically said that it was the Ashkenazi Jew or whatever.
That's right. I know exactly.
And I heard their thing that they have the highest IQs world by significantly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm one of the smartest people I know.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So let's talk about the second half a little bit, because you know how to get there. Go to outlawed.ca, right? For the second half. Human trafficking, we get into honey traps, multi-generational pedo and magic and the cycle of trauma. Get into Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Revolutions, and we talk a bit about World War II, and then we get into COVID and a little bit about Trump and the Intel leak.
And, World War II.
And his opinion on the whole COVID, like the chum is in the water, basically, and, it, you know, it's where's the money at and who's going after everything. His idea is kind of more about that than it being a plandemic.
Which makes a lot of sense.
I don't think so. I don't buy that. That's part of it. But That's more of a smokescreen, in my opinion.
Think so?
Yeah.
There you have it. Graham Dunlop does not agree. Check out Grammerica.ca, GrammericaOutlawed.ca to get that second hour, the plus extension, all the shows, all the ones we've done before. Get it now, then you won't have to go back as far and re-listen to all those shows. The Grundy app, the Legal Man app, the Brisson app. I mean, there's already a solid gold back catalog there, $6.39 a month. It's worth it. AmericaOutlawed.ca, sign up today.
Got some articles in there too.
The yeah, articles
like the ones we were talking about in the intro. There'll be some articles from Vaccine Choice Canada, some blogs, some cool audio things some for you to readings. Listen to instead of reading
listen
yourself.
Listen and hear about. I should do part two of that reset soon.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to say something else. If you want to get the swag, grammerica.ca/swag. Get some cool shirts. Hats coming soon. I think that's it.
Yeah, audiobooks, addlebrain.com.
Addlebrain.ca, yeah. Use your addlebrain. We love you guys. Sign up for that plus. It's how we pay the bills, keep things going. AmericaOutlawed.ca. We love you, motherfuckers. Have a great week. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Teach me all your secrets to get a good handle on a better way to live. How does one get out of bed every day in the throes of the apocalypse? Should I bury my head in the sand or sabotage their evil plan? I feel really trapped, an ant burned by a magnifying glass. It's all a little bit too convenient, all the evidence went up in flames. Phonies, fraudsters, scammers belong in the slammer, my friend, best give up their names. Should I call on militia men or pass out a petition pen? I feel really trapped, an ant burned by a magnifying glass. I don't know what y'all been told, but I got a soul made out of gold. Sound off, 1, 2, sound off, 3, 4, cadence count, 1, 2.
A deep bow!
Some time ago, a crazy dream came to me. I dreamt I was walking into World War III. As prophetic as humidity, as aching bones, as frantic animals. Sophia wrote it down, built an ark, now she floats it down the river in the dark. As prophetic as deja vu, as wormwood, as falling stars above. Sophia wrote it down, built an ark, now she floats it down a river dark. I can't even hear my own thoughts for the life of me over the din of a bruised and broken culture. The media spins and splatters and spins and clatters, and I cringe because it's psychological warfare. Don't you feel yourself getting really mad? How did we let it get this bad? Don't you feel really trapped like a brain in a vat? Hard to close Pandora's box, but sirens are singing me off a cliff. I'm looking to hitchhike to Shangri-La over yonder. Sophia, would you give me a lift? Hopped out of the Hegelian rebellion. Say goodbye to all you Machiavellians. Let evil destroy itself. I'm bound for Shangri-La. Shangri-La. Dream if I could be in yours. I'll let you be in my dream if I could be in yours. As prophetic as morning doves, as groundhogs, as falling stars above. Sophia wrote it down, built an ark, now we're floating it down a river dark. As prophetic a plane, now we're taking flight above a river bright.